Hello and welcome. You're listening to Speaking of Urology, the official podcast for Urology Times. As always, our commitment is to deliver urologists and allied health professionals timely and informative insights from leaders in the specialty. Our exclusive interviews bring expert analysis, practice advice, and policy perspectives to help our listeners practice more efficiently. I'm your host and editor, Hannah Clark. In this episode, I am joined by Dr. Melissa Kaufman, who is the Patricia and Rhodes Heart Professor in Urologic Surgery, as well as a Professor of Urology and Chief of the Division of Reconstructive Urology and Pelvic Health at Vanderbilt University Medical Center in Nashville, Tennessee. During our discussion, Dr. Kaufman outlined the new guideline on genitourinary syndrome of menopause, which was unveiled during the 2025 American Urological Association annual meeting in Las Vegas, Nevada. Kaufman also served as a panel member for the GSM guideline. So at this year's meeting, you'll be unveiling the AUA guidelines for genitourinary syndrome of menopause. So could you start out just describing some of the primary drivers for the creation of these guidelines?
Yes, thank you so much for the question. The genitourinary syndrome of menopause really describes a whole spectrum of symptoms and physical changes that result from declining estrogen and androgen concentrations in the genitourinary tract during and after menopause. And we estimate that up to 87% of postmenopausal patients may have some of these symptoms. You know, it's not quite consistent because there's been a lot of variation in what's been assessed and evaluated, the tools that are used, the settings for study populations, but we know it's very prevalent. And unlike some of the other kind of like vasomotor symptoms that we are accustomed to hearing about, like night sweats and hot flashes, the prevalence and intensity of some of these genitourinary symptoms increase with advancing age instead of regress. So it's really associated with a lot of decreased quality of life, decreased sexual function, decreased urinary function, and it really can interfere dramatically with a person's interpersonal relationship. So about half of people we estimate that have these kind of symptoms don't discuss them. And if they do discuss them, there was no treatments initiated. And, you know, we've really only been using this classification of genitourinary syndrome of menopause, or GSM as I'll refer to it, for about a decade. So it was really necessary when we interrogated the literature to create guidelines that we find the best of randomized controlled trials. But the data is very heterogeneous. The terminology was very, very heterogeneous. So what we have done is used a set of criteria that are very commonly employed to look through the literature for GSM and created what's really graded evidence that's focused on shared decision-making, really taking into account the patient's preferences and values. So, you know, in the end, what we want to do is optimize symptom control, maintain quality of life, and really decrease adverse effects for the millions of patients that are afflicted by the genitourinary syndrome of menopause.
Yeah, that's really great context. I appreciate you touching on that background. Yeah, so kind of getting into the actual content, how do these guidelines change the way that urologists should approach the diagnosis and the management of GSM, and what are some of the most significant updates?
Well, I think it's no surprise that the guidelines indicate that GSM can be screened through focused history, review of genitourinary symptoms. Patients should be queried about the bother of symptoms like urinary symptoms, pain with sex, vaginal symptoms. And this can include things like urgency, incontinence, and recurrent urinary tract infections, because oftentimes these are very comorbid conditions with GSM. But what's really changed, I believe, across the spectrum for all urology guidelines is how we discuss with patients. And so we are very focused in this guideline on shared decision making. And this should be employed in all healthcare decisions, but it's really very pertinent to things like GSM, where these are preference sensitive clinical decisions. So there may not be one right answer all the time for every patient. It's based on their values and their desires. And so we focus on these guidelines, not just with very high yield ways that you can treat, but when to treat and how to have that discussion with the patient to ensure that your goals are aligned with their goals for treatment.
Right. Yeah, those are all really important points. Yeah, do these guidelines specifically touch on how to address some of the common patient concerns or the misinformation surrounding vaginal estrogen?
Yeah, that is a wonderful question. And it was 2003, so I had just begun residency, and the FDA put this big black box warning on all estrogen products, causing saying that there's an increased risk of endometrial cancer, cardiovascular disorders, breast cancer, and dementia. The fact is that what we discuss in the guidelines and what's been revealed is that there is a growing body of very strong evidence that local low-dose vaginal estrogen does not increase risks of any of those diseases. And so we are very pleased that there's no data necessarily that stratifies each of these risks for all estrogen products, but certainly for low-dose vaginal estrogen, it does not increase the risk of recurrence. It does not re increase the risk of incidence of breast cancer, cardiovascular disease, dementia, or endometrial cancer. So we have put statements in that indicate this safety profile for low-dose vaginal estrogen that should really help counseling with patients.
Right. Yeah, appreciate you touching on that. And then what areas still need more research and clarifications when it comes to this condition?
Well, there are so many future studies that the panel discussed, and some of them are just simply standardized definitions and uniform diagnostic criteria for even beginning the evaluation of GSM. So, if we had a common set of validated outcome measures and reporting standards, it would make a large difference in how we define the next set of data. We really think that exposure across a lot of different di disciplines to the terminology of GSM will also help demystify this condition. And so some of this outreach and what we're doing at the AUA and where we hope these guidelines are disseminated across many disciplines is really going to place a new framework for the what it's for the syndrome to for outreach for patients. But we need really qualitative and quantitative studies on things like education on medications, how to think about alternative therapies, because there are lots of them out there, and we've put the in the guidelines statements regarding all the different alternative therapies that may be utilized, and how to message these things to our providers who are seeing these patients frontline. So understanding the patient perspective is critically important. But one of the things that, of course, needs to happen across all research enterprises is really intentional efforts to make sure that we have a diverse and clinically relevant populations for trials that includes something to reflect the real-world experience of the patients and providers so we can really generalize this data. And there's a number of commonly accepted treatments that we discuss, including low-dose vaginal estrogen, but there's still really significant gaps that we've identified in what we call comparative effectiveness interventions. So as we individualize treatment decisions, we really need good efficacy parameters between the highest utilization interventions to determine what may be appropriate for one patient group versus another patient group. So these are all hopeful and aspirational goals for the next that this guideline will hopefully precipitate future research in this arena.
Right. Well, yeah, looking forward to those future directions as well. Yeah, is there anything else you wanted to add about these guidelines that we didn't touch on already?
Yeah, I mean, really, on behalf of the literally millions of patients who are going to benefit from this really landmark content, we as a panel want to express our deep appreciation to the American Urological Association. It was a very courageous decision on their behalf to sponsor development of this guideline and to take ownership of disseminating this information for all urologists to benefit from. And what we've come up with are really pragmatic statements that can be rapidly implemented. And I do believe are going to be transformational, both to engage urologists to treat these patients, as well as improve these patients' outcomes in a very global sense.
You just heard an exclusive interview with Dr. Melissa Kaufman on the AUA's new guideline on genitourinary syndrome of menopause. Be sure to subscribe to Speaking of Urology on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps. You can get the latest in urology news, practice management advice, and health policy updates by visiting our website, urologytimes.com, or by following us on X, formerly Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook at Urology Times. Thank you for listening.